Hello. This is the Pearson EdXL International GCSE English as a Second Language, Paper 2 Listening Test, Summer 2014. This test is in three parts. You will hear three extracts and will have to answer questions on what you hear. At the beginning of each extract, there will be a pause to give you time to read the questions. You will hear all three parts twice. Write your answers in the spaces in your question booklet as you listen. Part 1. In this part, you will hear a teacher giving details to students about the Year 11 camp. Listen and complete the notes. Write no more than three words and/or a number for each answer. One mark will be awarded for each completed gap. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for coming. I'm Mr. Lewis, the Year 11 coordinator. This meeting today is for students who are interested in going on the two-day camp near Lake Milton next June, and I'm very pleased to see so many people here today. The trip is a few months away, and we need to do quite a lot of organising beforehand. But let me give you a general idea of what happens on the camp. You will spend the days doing different activities, and each one includes a special task. Your first challenge will be the high ropes course. You will learn rope skills and use these to move around high up in the trees and enjoy a bird's eye view of the forest. The main aim of this activity is to cross a river where you will put your skills to use. For those of you who do not like heights, don't worry. There will be plenty of safety equipment to help build your confidence. The next activity will be water sports on the lake. You will have a chance to do some sailing or canoeing, followed by a team building task. For this, you will work in small groups to build a boat, which you will then test out on the lake. This activity is great fun, and you should expect to get very wet. The final challenge we have planned for you on the last day is mountain biking, where you will be working in groups and using your map reading skills on a treasure hunt. You will need to search the forests and hills around the lake to solve the clues and find the hidden treasure. A word about accommodation during your visit. You will be staying in cabins, each with six beds in them. We want to make sure that you're comfortable with your roommates. So please could you tell me the names of two friends so that we can arrange for you to be with at least one person that you know well. The cabins we have chosen are located close to the washrooms and are also very near the camp kitchens. So, I hope that gives you a flavour of the type of things we will be doing on camp. If you are still interested in going, you will need to ask your parents to fill in permission slips, and I must have them back by next Friday. Please give these to your form tutor, who will then pass them on to me. At the same time, please hand in the forms with information on health and dietary needs. Oh yes, one other matter. If you want to go to camp, there is a £30 deposit that you will each need to pay by the 22nd of April. You will need to make another, final payment of £70 by the 5th of May. Please could you see the school finance officer for further details on this. If you want to check some of the details of this meeting or get copies of the forms, I have put it all on the school website. You can find everything under Year 11 Camp. What else do you need to know? What to take with you. At the moment, I can tell you that you will need to take your own sleeping bags because we will definitely be staying in the cabins. I will be able to give you more information on what else you will need to have at another meeting closer to the time. There is one thing I need to warn you about. This camp aims to get you away from the comforts of home for a short while, build up your confidence, and improve your ability to work in teams. We have therefore decided that there will be absolutely no electronic equipment on the camp. Your teachers will have access to mobile phones so that you can keep in touch with your family if you need to, so you won't really be completely cut off from civilization as you know it. That's about it from me. If you want to talk to me after this, you will need to go to my...
Now, listen a second time and check your answers.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for coming. I'm Mr. Lewis, the Year 11 Coordinator. This meeting today is for students who are interested in going on the two-day camp near Lake Milton next June, and I'm very pleased to see so many people here today. The trip is a few months away, and we need to do quite a lot of organising beforehand. But let me give you a general idea of what happens on the camp. You will spend the days doing different activities, and each one includes a special task. Your first challenge will be the high ropes course. You will learn rope skills and use these to move around high up in the trees and enjoy a bird's eye view of the forest. The main aim of this activity is to cross a river where you will put your skills to use. For those of you who do not like heights, don't worry. There will be plenty of safety equipment to help build your confidence. The next activity will be water sports on the lake. You will have a chance to do some sailing or canoeing, followed by a team-building task. For this, you will work in small groups to build a boat, which you will then test out on the lake. This activity is great fun, and you should expect to get very wet. The final challenge we have planned for you on the last day is mountain biking, where you will be working in groups and using your map reading skills on a treasure hunt. You will need to search the forests and hills around the lake to solve the clues and find the hidden treasure. A word about accommodation during your visit. You will be staying in cabins, each with 6 beds in them. We want to make sure that you're comfortable with your roommates. So please could you tell me the names of 2 friends so that we can arrange for you to be with at least one person that you know well. The cabins we have chosen are located close to the washrooms and are also very near the camp kitchens. So, I hope that gives you a flavour of the type of things we will be doing on camp. If you are still interested in going, you will need to ask your parents to fill in permission slips, and I must have them back by next Friday. Please give these to your form tutor, who will then pass them on to me. At the same time, please hand in the forms with information on health and dietary needs. Oh yes, one other matter. If you want to go to camp, there is a £30 deposit that you will each need to pay by the 22nd of April. You will need to make another, final payment of £70 by the 5th of May. Please could you see the school finance officer for further details on this. If you want to check some of the details of this meeting or get copies of the forms, I have put it all on the school website. You can find everything under Year 11 Camp. What else do you need to know? What to take with you. At the moment, I can tell you that you will need to take your own sleeping bags because we will definitely be staying in the cabins. I will be able to give you more information on what else you will need to have at another meeting closer to the time. There is one thing I need to warn you about. This camp aims to get you away from the comforts of home for a short while, build up your confidence, and improve your ability to work in teams. We have therefore decided that there will be absolutely no electronic equipment on the camp. Your teachers will have access to mobile phones so that you can keep in touch with your family if you need to, so you won't really be completely cut off from civilization as you know it. That's about it from me. If you want to talk to me after this, you will need to go to my...
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two. Part 2. In this part, you will hear two students, Patrick and Lorna, discussing some work they are doing on how certain animals use objects as tools to perform a range of tasks. Listen and complete the table. Write no more than three words and or a number for each answer. One mark will be awarded for each answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Hi, Lorna. Have you been waiting long?
Oh, hi, Patrick. No, I've just got here myself. So, have you got the table we need to complete for this work?
Yes. Should we make a start? Mrs. Smith says that we need to identify the tool that each animal uses and what it uses the tool for, and then add any other interesting observation about each creature, right?
Yes, that's about it. So, shall we start with crows? What have you found out?
This bird is found in the forests of New Caledonia, a group of islands located about 930 miles from the eastern coast of Australia. They have become famous for using sticks, which they find on the forest floor.
Okay. I'll add that to the table. Have you got anything else to put here?
Yes. They have been studied both in the wild and in captivity, and scientists have found that they use sticks to remove small bugs from inside holes in trees. They use them in a number of ways, such as a slow movement when they cannot see the food source, and a rapid movement when there are leaves present.
Right. I've got that. What about the last column? What should we add here?
Well, I found out that the bird is so famous that it appears on stamps from New Caledonia. Should we put that in?
Well, I think something more related to tool behaviour would be a better idea. Have you got anything else?
Okay. Well, I also discovered that they take the sticks with them and place them under their feet when they do not need them, such as when they are feeding.
That's better. I'll put that in. Okay, next. Sea otters. This is one I did some work on. These are creatures found off the west coast of North America. They are considered to be clever creatures and are famous for the way they use rocks. They take them when they go hunting. They swim down to the ocean floor and use their paws to dig for food. They put this in their mouths and swim to the surface. There, they lie on their backs and use the rocks to break open shellfish that they have found. What is really interesting is that they store their tools in their armpits when they do not need them.
I'll put that in the third column. Great. So, let's move on to the dolphins. We both worked on this one, didn't we?
Yes. What did you find out?
That there are some dolphins off the west coast of Australia that use sponges as tools.
Incredible, isn't it? Although, this is the only place they have seen this behaviour.
Yes. These dolphins come very close to shore and have become quite used to humans. So when scientists started following them out to sea, the dolphins paid them no attention. After a while, the scientists worked out why the dolphins put these sponges on their noses or beaks. It is to stop poisonous fish from injuring them when they search for food on the ocean floor.
Yes, I read about how scientists noted that not all dolphins were using the sponges and tried to find out which ones did. The results were most interesting. They analysed the DNA of 69 dolphins that didn't use them and 36 that did. What they discovered is that all the dolphins that use sponges are related and that almost all of them are female. It seems the male dolphins are too busy with other tasks, such as protecting the group.
That's amazing. I'll add that to the table. Okay. So, moving on to elephants, what have we got here? Oh yes, I found that scientists in Nepal have been researching the behaviour of a group of captive elephants that are used to give tourists rides. They discovered that these animals use tree branches as a tool. They find an appropriate piece, grab it with their trunks, and then hit themselves gently with it. People became fascinated with this behaviour and wanted to understand why the animals were doing this. At first, it was thought the elephants were trying to keep cool. But after a detailed study, the researchers discovered that the branches were being used to keep flies away and not to move the air about.
OK, I'll add that to the table. And what about the last column?
Perhaps we could add that elephants have a built-in toolkit. They can spray themselves with water and use their huge ears to keep cool and even use their trunks to pick up baby elephants in an emergency.
And last but not least, chimpanzees. Well, we have loads of examples to choose from here. Scientists have identified about 35 different examples of tools being used by them. They have also been observed using sticks and rocks, but the one I would like to include is the chewed up leaves that they use as a sponge.
Fine, we'll put that one in. And when do they use it?
When they are trying to reach for water from awkward places, such as holes in rocks.
Okay. And anything special we can add for chimpanzees?
Well, males and females use tools differently. Males do not use them very often, probably because they do not depend on food obtained by using tools. But what I think we should make a note of is the fact that it can take them 7 years to master the use of tools. Chimpanzees stay with their mothers for that long, and they learn tool use from them. Their first attempts are often not at all successful.
Okay, I'll put that fact in. So when do we need to hand this to Mrs.
Now, listen a second time and check your answers.
Hi, Lorna. Have you been waiting long?
Oh, hi, Patrick. No, I've just got here myself. So, have you got the table we need to complete for this work?
Yes, should we make a start? Mrs. Smith says that we need to identify the tool that each animal uses and what it uses the tool for, and then add any other interesting observation about each creature, right?
Yes, that's about it. So, shall we start with crows? What have you found out?
This bird is found in the forests of New Caledonia, a group of islands located about 930 miles from the eastern coast of Australia. They have become famous for using sticks, which they find on the forest floor.
OK, I'll add that to the table. Have you got anything else to put here?
Yes. They have been studied both in the wild and in captivity, and scientists have found that they use sticks to remove small bugs from inside holes in trees. They use them in a number of ways, such as a slow movement when they cannot see the food source, and a rapid movement when there are leaves present.
Right, I've got that. What about the last column? What should we add here?
Well, I found out that the bird is so famous that it appears on stamps from New Caledonia. Should we put that in?
Well, I think something more related to tool behaviour would be a better idea. Have you got anything else?
OK. Well, I also discovered that they take the sticks with them and place them under their feet when they do not need them, such as when they are feeding.
That's better. I'll put that in. OK, next. Sea otters. This is one I did some work on. These are creatures found off the west coast of North America. They are considered to be clever creatures and are famous for the way they use rocks. They take them when they go hunting. They swim down to the ocean floor and use their paws to dig for food. They put this in their mouths and swim to the surface. There, they lie on their backs and use the rocks to break open shellfish that they have found. What is really interesting is that they store their tools in their armpits when they do not need them.
I'll put that in the third column. Great. So, let's move on to the dolphins. We both worked on this one, didn't we?
Yes. What did you find out?
That there are some dolphins off the west coast of Australia that use sponges as tools.
Incredible, isn't it? Although, this is the only place they have seen this behaviour.
Yes. These dolphins come very close to shore and have become quite used to humans. So when scientists started following them out to sea, the dolphins paid them no attention. After a while, the scientists worked out why the dolphins put these sponges on their noses, or beaks. It is to stop poisonous fish from injuring them when they search for food on the ocean floor.
Yes. I read about how scientists noted that not all dolphins were using the sponges and tried to find out which ones did. The results were most interesting. They analysed the DNA of 69 dolphins that didn't use them and 36 that did. What they discovered is that all the dolphins that use sponges are related and that almost all of them are female. It seems the male dolphins are too busy with other tasks, such as protecting the group.
That's amazing. I'll add that to the table. Okay, so, moving on to elephants, what have we got here? Oh yes, I found that scientists in Nepal have been researching the behaviour of a group of captive elephants that are used to give tourists rides. They discovered that these animals use tree branches as a tool. They find an appropriate piece, grab it with their trunks, and then hit themselves gently with it. People became fascinated with this behaviour and wanted to understand why the animals were doing this. At first, it was thought the elephants were trying to keep cool. But after a detailed study, the researchers discovered that the branches were being used to keep flies away and not to move the air about.
OK, I'll add that to the table. And what about the last column?
Perhaps we could add that elephants have a built-in toolkit. They can spray themselves with water and use their huge ears to keep cool, and even use their trunks to pick up baby elephants in an emergency.
And last but not least, chimpanzees. Well, we have loads of examples to choose from here. Scientists have identified about 35 different examples of tools being used by them. They have also been observed using sticks and rocks. But the one I would like to include is the chewed up leaves that they use as a sponge.
Fine, we'll put that one in. And when do they use it?
When they are trying to reach for water from awkward places, such as holes in rocks.
OK. And anything special we can add for chimpanzees?
Well, males and females use tools differently. Males do not use them very often, probably because they do not depend on food obtained by using tools. But what I think we should make a note of is the fact that it can take them 7 years to master the use of tools. Chimpanzees stay with their mothers for that long, and they learn tool use from them. Their first attempts are often not at all successful.
OK, I'll put that fact in. So when do we need to hand this to Mrs.
That's the end of part two. Now turn to part three. Part three. In this part, you will hear a radio broadcast on the science of supermarket shopping. Listen and complete the sentences below. Write no more than three words and/or a number for each answer. One mark will be awarded for each answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Have you ever gone to the supermarket to buy, say, a bottle of milk and come out with four or five other items? Well, it happens to me a lot, and I am not alone. According to research, 44% of Britons visit the supermarket more than once a week, but worryingly, people are overspending by an average of £27 on each trip. Tonight, my guest is Dr. Rose Collins of Norfolk College. She is here to tell us what happens when we go to supermarkets and how they are very carefully planned and scientifically laid out to encourage you to buy. Good evening, Dr. Collins.
Hello.
So, Dr. Collins, what can you tell us about the science of supermarkets?
Supermarkets use techniques to influence you to buy more and perhaps buy things that are against your better interests. Some of these work on your subconscious, such as colour. For example, red is used to grab your attention. It is the colour of action, and that is why it is found in sale signs, to encourage you to get a bargain. Green is associated with freshness and health, and blue is used to establish truth and friendliness. At the other end of the spectrum, you have cooler colours, such as pale yellows, which are more restful. Music and lighting are also carefully chosen to influence your behaviour. The location of products is also very carefully planned. At the entrance, the idea is to stimulate our senses so that we are encouraged to step inside. For this reason, fresh produce section, bakery, and flower shop are usually placed near the beginning. Research has also found that if fresh fruit and vegetables are placed at the entrance, people spend longer in the supermarket.
And I understand that the design of the supermarket is important.
Yes. Most supermarkets are designed as a rectangle with lines going up and down and across. It has been discovered that customers do not go up and down supermarket aisles in a methodical way. Instead, they stick to the outside edge and drop in and out of aisles. It gets the most traffic, and leading brands pay a lot of money to be located there. And no doubt you have noticed that milk and bread are almost always located at the back of the shop. This is because they are popular products, so customers have to walk past enticements and tempting snacks to get to them. This increases the chance that shoppers will act on impulse and buy something. Another technique is called adjacency. This is when categories of food which go together are placed near each other. This is not only for customers' convenience, but also to increase sales of both products, and it explains why tea is located close to biscuits and why crackers are put with the gourmet cheese. The checkout is another carefully planned location. By the time the shopper reaches it, he or she has committed to the items in the shopping basket. To squeeze a bit more money out of a shopper's pocket, the supermarket places cheap items here, such as sweets and magazines, which may tempt the person to reach out and put something else on the conveyor belt.
Yes, I'm often tempted by the things at the checkout.
There are also items called emotional purchases, and these are the ones that people spend more time on. Baby foods are an example of this, and it is the reason why they are placed away from most other items in the supermarket, because they know that people will stop and start to get emotionally involved in this purchase. There is also a lot of research going on into what exactly we look at in the shop. A special device called an eye tracker is being used to obtain this information. It looks like a pair of glasses with a small camera attached to it, and it is used to measure exactly where we look. It allows researchers to see through shoppers' eyes as they go about their shopping. Most of us are pretty lazy about where we look. We generally look at eye level and down to about waist height. We tend to scan left to right more than up and down. This has implications for food companies as they pay a lot of money to be in the middle of the shelf. Expensive items are placed here, while cheap products, such as tinned tuna, are located at the bottom or very top.
So what advice would you give people to avoid being tempted into buying extra items in the supermarket?
Well, it is important to realise that you will not be able to resist all temptations, but there are a few things you can do. One old favourite is to shop with a list. It's boring, I know, but if you go through the process of writing down what you need, you are going to be thinking about it a little bit more when you get to the supermarket. You should also avoid going to the supermarket with people who can be stressful to be with, such as young children, because what will happen is that you will make decisions that aren't good for you. Another thing is not to shop if you are hungry. Also, be aware of your food weaknesses. If you know you can't resist ice cream, try your best to stay clear of the frozen section. And finally, be sure to ask yourself, do I really need or do I simply want this item? If you are unsure, perhaps you should leave it on the shelf.
Now, listen a second time and check your answers.
Have you ever gone to the supermarket to buy, say, a bottle of milk and come out with four or five other items? Well, it happens to me a lot, and I am not alone. According to research, 44% of Britons visit the supermarket more than once a week, but worryingly, people are overspending by an average of £27 on each trip. Tonight, my guest is Dr. Rose Collins of Norfolk College. She is here to tell us what happens when we go to supermarkets and how they are very carefully planned and scientifically laid out to encourage you to buy. Good evening, Dr. Collins.
Hello.
So, Dr. Collins, what can you tell us about the science of supermarkets?
Supermarkets use techniques to influence you to buy more and perhaps buy things that are against your better interests. Some of these work on your subconscious, such as colour. For example, red is used to grab your attention. It is the colour of action, and that is why it is found in sale signs, to encourage you to get a bargain. Green is associated with freshness and health. And blue is used to establish truth and friendliness. At the other end of the spectrum, you have cooler colours, such as pale yellows, which are more restful. Music and lighting are also carefully chosen to influence your behaviour. The location of products is also very carefully planned. At the entrance, the idea is to stimulate our senses so that we are encouraged to step inside. For this reason, fresh produce section, bakery, and flower shop are usually placed near the beginning. Research has also found that if fresh fruit and vegetables are placed at the entrance, people spend longer in the supermarket.
And I understand that the design of the supermarket is important.
Yes. Most supermarkets are designed as a rectangle with lines going up and down and across. It has been discovered that customers do not go up and down supermarket aisles in a methodical way. Instead, they stick to the outside edge and drop in and out of aisles. It gets the most traffic, and leading brands pay a lot of money to be located there. And no doubt you have noticed that milk and bread are almost always located at the back of the shop. This is because they are popular products, so customers have to walk past enticements and tempting snacks to get to them. This increases the chance that shoppers will act on impulse and buy something. Another technique is called adjacency. This is when categories of food which go together are placed near each other. This is not only for customers' convenience, but also to increase sales of both products, and it explains why tea is located close to biscuits and why crackers are put with the gourmet cheese. The checkout is another carefully planned location. By the time the shopper reaches it, he or she has committed to the items in the shopping basket. To squeeze a bit more money out of a shopper's pocket, the supermarket places cheap items here, such as sweets and magazines, which may tempt the person to reach out and put something else on the conveyor belt.
Yes, I'm often tempted by the things at the checkout.
There are also items called emotional purchases, and these are the ones that people spend more time on. Baby foods are an example of this, and it is the reason why they are placed away from most other items in the supermarket. because they know that people will stop and start to get emotionally involved in this purchase. There is also a lot of research going on into what exactly we look at in the shop. A special device called an eye tracker is being used to obtain this information. It looks like a pair of glasses with a small camera attached to it, and it is used to measure exactly where we look. It allows researchers to see through shoppers' eyes as they go about their shopping. Most of us are pretty lazy about where we look. We generally look at eye level and down to about waist height. We tend to scan left to right more than up and down. This has implications for food companies as they pay a lot of money to be in the middle of the shelf. Expensive items are placed here, while cheap products, such as tinned tuna, are located at the bottom or very top.
So what advice would you give people to avoid being tempted into buying extra items in the supermarket?
Well, it is important to realise that you will not be able to resist all temptations, but there are a few things you can do. One old favourite is to shop with a list. It's boring, I know, but if you go through the process of writing down what you need, you are going to be thinking about it a little bit more when you get to the supermarket. You should also avoid going to the supermarket with people who can be stressful to be with, such as young children, because what will happen is that you will make decisions that aren't good for you. Another thing is not to shop if you are hungry. Also, be aware of your food weaknesses. If you know you can't resist ice cream, try your best to stay clear of the frozen section. And finally, be sure to ask yourself, do I really need, or do I simply want this item? If you are unsure, perhaps you should leave it on the shelf.
That's the end of the test. Please wait for your question booklets to be collected. Thank you, and good luck.